Good morning and welcome to Good to Grow. I'm Denise Rodriguez.
And I'm John White.
Well, John, today we're continuing our conversation on our Made in the Shade gardening tips for folks that are looking to add some additional interest into an area, maybe in their backyard, in their garden, where they want to have a little retreat. And, you know, we know that sunlight and sun, it's kind of intense in the desert southwest here in El Paso. So there's varying degrees of shade. I think that's one thing we need to kind of clarify as we move on.
You know, typically, we have ample sunlight, and it's very intense. And you know, a lot of plants put in the wrong location will actually bleach out just from the intense sunlight and the heat. So you want to be real careful where you place plants. And the opposite can happen if you put them in too dark an area where they don't get enough light. Then they don't bloom, or they begin to elongate and they get real stretched out and they get weak and they fall over and things like that. So you got to be careful where you place plants, and you kind of want to know where your plants thrive best. But speaking about the desert, since we have some ample sunlight, giving plants, even some of our native plants, a little bit of protection, they really look better.
Right.
So they just seem to do better with a little bit of protection. The sun just is so intense that plants just kind of like stop growing. They kind of go through like a, not a dormancy, but they just kind of stall and stop and wait for the rains and cools down, and then they start growing again, start blooming and growing again. So the same thing can happen in your garden. So you just want to be real aware of microclimates and not just temperature, but sunlight.
Right. And I think the consistency of what people see in our traditional landscapes here in El Paso is, you know, when there's houses being developed, they kind of scrape the area, make everything really flat. And we don't really incorporate the natural hills. It's typical when we're talking about our native vegetation. So, you know, people start thinking just flat and straight, but really you need to look and have your eyes kind of go from different sections and look, kind of start the ground cover and then all the way up. Oppositely, you have your large canopy trees. And then after that, you want to slowly bring your eyes down to eye level and then to ground level as well. Well, continuing with our tips on there is to employ architectural elements. So look for fun and unique objects to fill your garden with interest. And this can also include hardscapes, containers, paving material, and also accent plants.
Right. And a lot of our accent plants for the desert are cacti, agaves, things like that, yuccas. And you got to be careful where those are placed, because they don't do well in heavy shade. So they like a, you know, they will like either a full sun or a filtered light. And some are agaves, you know, are pointed and sharp and, you know, stiff leaved. And so they give great architectural, you know, balance to the garden because of the stiffness, where everything else is soft. So they kind of help to sometimes draw your eye to this, you know, like the whale's tongue agave is a huge agave, you know, 3-4 feet in diameter and, you know, almost 3 feet tall with these big wide pads. And it's a beautiful thing to see because it's so symmetrical in its growth habit, you know, and you get to see it. And it's just a gorgeous looking plant. And that's a common accent plant. And there are some other, there's a mountain yucca, Yucca shadii, which I think is now Yucca matarensis, but it's a more of a shade-loving type yucca, and you'll find it, you know, in hillsides in the mountains, and it's over, you know, overgrown by trees and other shrubs, and it grows in that type of climate. So it's one that will take less sunlight, doesn't need the solid bright sunlight.
It's a good choice for those, and all of those that you just mentioned are actually lower water use plants too.
Right.
So if you're in an area where...
Yeah, put too much water, you rot them out.
You're drawing them out, right?
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah, so they don't require much. And, you know, they can be put in, you know, fairly large containers, you know, kind of not real tall ones, but wide containers.
Uh-huh.
Because the root systems on these plants aren't real deep, and but they are wide. And so sometimes you can, you know, put a piece of flagstone down, have a nice kind of bonsai type pot that's low and wide, and you can put an agave in that, and it'll thrive in that, give you the impact that you want in your garden.
Wow, very nice, very nice. And thinking of drowning out, there's another option that you can have for your shade area, which would be to add a water feature. So install a stream or other water feature to give your garden an extra sensory appeal with the sound of trickling water.
Right, and you know, you can't buy kits and put in fountains and, you know, water features and stuff. You want to make sure you know what you're doing, because you'll find out that it does have some maintenance required with it. You just don't put it in and leave it alone.
Right, exactly.
It fills with, you know, stuff blows in, fills with trash, and algae, you know, takes over and things. So you really got to manage it and take it over. So, you know, if you don't feel you're up to it, you might hire somebody that is qualified, has good experience putting in ponds and waterfalls and water features. But water is good for our psyche,
right?
You know, our brains. Hearing water drip and seeing it is just a soothing effect. But also our wildlife love water. So if you have a water feature, it's great for the butterflies and the bees and, you know, different things flying around, animals and stuff, that they can drink out of the water. So be careful about putting any chemicals, you know, pool-type chemicals in your pond if you're going to have animals drinking out of it. So you want to be careful of that.
And we know a few people that actually have large, very large water features, and in fact, almost koi ponds in their backyards as well. That's definitely a very striking retreat that they have created with their water features in their gardens. But if you don't want to get that involved.
Right. A lot of them I've talked to, those koi do grow into big koi.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot
and
of
then
koi.
And they have offspring and they have more koi. And
yeah.
And then people are starting to give you koi.
Exactly. Yeah, I've witnessed a lot of koi adoptions circles that we run.
Yeah, they do very well.
Wonderful. And if you don't want to get that complicated and that difficult, I always, you know, just encourage people to put in a very shallow water feature, whether that's a shallow bird bath or even a nice little trickle, or even dedicate one of your drip irrigation lines and kind of modify that and have just that nice little trickle. It's enough not to drown the wildlife, but that constant water is also going to naturally clean out and prevent it from being stagnant.
Yeah, I think it's on the Texas A&M rainwater harvesting thing that they have a little drip fountain that's for wildlife, dogs, you know, if your dog's around.
Right.
You know, it keeps a little constant little drip, but of course we have to have rain.
Yeah, exactly.
So your rain barrel gets some water in it, but you can have that water drip out just one drop at a time into, it has little instructions for making your own little concrete basin.
Right.
You know, and you can do it that way and, add water for insects, plants, animals. And so it's a good idea. And you're using our, what rain we do have, you can use some of that water for that.
Exactly. And then those low growing, shrubs and ground covers also add that protection that those wildlife definitely need, not just water, but also the shelter.
And when you're putting your garden in, you do want to think about butterflies and, things like that. So you want to mix your palette so that you have plants that are attracting butterflies and hummingbirds and things like that to it.
Most definitely. And speaking of expanding your palette, let's talk a little bit about selecting the color theme. Maximizing the power of color in your shade garden by choosing only one or two hues. So let's talk a little bit about specific plants. And you talked about butterflies and having, a nice little area for them to come and visit. And let's start off with the color blue, because we have the I believe it's called Greg's Blue Mist is the common name to that.
Yeah, once that blue mist comes into bloom, it is a butterfly magnet.
Right.
And we get some of the more monarch-looking type butterflies that come into it, the queens and viceroys and some of those. And but they'll just, there'll be, 20 or 30 or 40 butterflies on that plant when it's in full bloom. So it looks great, but it has to go up to about midsummer before it really starts blooming. So it dies down to the ground and then comes back up. It's a perennial and it spreads. So your your bunch will thicken.
Right. Exactly.
But a great plant to use and doesn't require much maintenance or anything. So it's a good one. And again, a great butterfly magnet.
Definitely. And speaking of being in the blue hue, there's also a couple of salvias that do well as well and are tolerant to the Farinaceae. There's actually two, isn't that the native one that we have that's much larger?
The Salvia Farinaceae, the native one, is a much taller one.
Right.
Has blue flowers on it. And then we have the little smaller ones that were kind of, the horticulturists have hybridized it and brought it down to where it's more of a shorter form.
Yeah, I've seen those in a lot of six-packs.
Right.
In the nursery trade.
Some of the name Victoria Blue, different mm-hmm. names like that. And it's a good one to use, too. It gives you that good blue color. And, if your area's not too heavily shaded, you might get by using the chaparral sage, which is kind of popular in town and has an aroma to it. And that's one that gives you that nice blue color. We have a little Mexican petunia called Rialia.
That one does
that,
well.
That does well.
And that one doesn't like too much water either.
No, and it'll spread a little, so, you know.
Be a good blue addition.
Yeah, kind of watch it. It may escape the area.
So let's go to the opposite side of the spectrum on there, and let's look at some yellow plants. You know, you kind of put in several types of yellow plants in your area. You're going to really provide that striking color palette for you. And there's bulbine that we spoke about last week that we really like. Long-lasting flowers, very little maintenance. But there's also some that, just are spectacular around the museum, John, the columbine.
Right, or golden columbine, Hinckley columbine, several different names to it. But I try to encourage people to plant it. But the key to keeping it going is it likes the shade mm-hmm. and does need moisture.
Okay.
So it's great when it's in bloom in the spring, just spectacular. But you got to keep the water on because once it blooms, it goes to seed. You got to cut off the old, seed heads. You can sprinkle the seed in and get some more plants or just clip the seed heads off and then keep it moist and keep it going, but it'll go through another bloom cycle, so you'll get some more bloom. But it really has trouble during the heat of the summer because it really likes the shade and the coolness and water.
Wonderful. And before we're out of time, we're going to talk about one more yellow plant, and that's going to be probably one of the favorite plants around here, is the chocolate flower.
All right, chocolate flower is a hit with everybody. If they don't know it, and, they get exposed to it, get to sniff the flower on it.
Right.
They're sold right there.
Right.
And so chocolate flower is a great plant. Does good on borders. Doesn't get real tall. So, either is planted as a ground cover in an area or along borders, along walkways and stuff, or in little patio or entryway areas where you really get a sniff of chocolate in the morning.
Right, exactly. What a great way to round out your shade garden.
Coffee
and chocolate.
Or hot chocolate.
Depending on the time of the year, right?
Yeah.
Most definitely. Wow. Well, we really hope that giving you some tips here to be able to maximize the shade in your garden. And if you have any questions on any of the plants that we covered today, you can go ahead and visit the Master Gardener website. That's at txmg.org/El Paso and look under Shade Tolerant Plants for the Far West Texas. And if you have any questions, please feel free to call us at the Master Gardener Help Desk at 771-2354. We want to thank you for listening to today's show and thank Laurent Terrazas for engineering and producing. I'm Denise Rodriguez.
And I'm John White.
And remember, a gardener's shadow is the best way to keep your garden
good to grow.